going to draw your attention to what's going to happen for the next several Sabbaths as far as the lesson is concerned, because it's trying to take a principle that Mrs. White said, if we ever get this vision and use these principles, how fast the light will go around the world. Now, if you want to get your songbooks out or get the quarterly out, get ready to throw it at me, because I'm going to make a statement. And I don't know how you're going to take it, but you just fire back. I believe God is protecting the world from us. Pardon?
Us. Who is us?
The world.
Administer the world itself.
Well, throw something. How does that hit you? Why are we still here?
Well, we're not there.
Yes, okay. Okay, tell me. Yeah. Now tell me about that. What are you saying?
We're not ready.
Okay.
And but what is it? Enough that he's waiting and working.
But what is he waiting for? Let me give you a statement I heard. It's not mine, but I'm going to repeat it long enough. It'll become mine, and people will be quoting me. Listen to this. The key word for religion is doing. The key word for a relationship is done. You like that? The key word for religion is doing. The key word for spirituality or relationship is done. Would that make the gospel different if we approach the world with the perspective of done? Do you understand what I mean? Ask me a question. What does that mean?
What do you mean? What does it mean?
Anybody? Yes.
Mm-hmm. He did not go first to an individual and preach the gospel, but he did help those individuals.
Okay, that's a good That's a good way to look at it.
And you asked me a question earlier, why has Jesus not come?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have not carried the gospel to all the world.
Okay. So what are we carrying? What are we carrying? That we're told that once we begin carrying the right thing, God will speed us through the world like lightning. Is it possible that the world is being protected from us? Come on, speak up, or you're going to be saying bad things about me when you leave this class. Is that possible? You're sober, you're silent. Yes?
Well, I can think of examples, and we cited one last week about the baptistry, the clique on the baptistry.
Yes, yes.
That was an example that I can apply to what you're saying about how we are taking the wrong message. We have experiences as well of little things that we have done as a church member, innocently perhaps, but it turned out to be some of the dumbest things we could do to project something to the world. And I think in the context that you're speaking, those are the kinds of things that we are giving the wrong message to the world.
Okay. Is it possible that when you start looking at when God was taking the children of Israel to the wilderness? Now, was it really punishing them for them wandering around the wilderness? Why did they wander around in the wilderness? God wanted to take them into the promised land. What was it?
11 days.
40 years and 11 days later, they enter the promised land. Now, was God punishing them? And for instance, Moses, all this that he did, and yet God wouldn't let him go into the promised land. Why? Was God punishing him? And by the way, I love that statement that you had, that even though we don't understand why, God has a greater thing beyond that. And guess what happened when Moses woke up from dying, and look what he beheld. So was God punishing the children of Israel? You've done bad things, and therefore I'm going to have you walk around in the wilderness until you die. What do you think it is?
No, I'm thinking when I have to reteach, re-instruct a student, when they don't get it, we go back around again.
Oh, okay.
And again.
Okay.
So sometimes we have remedial students.
Okay.
I don't think it's a question of God punishing. It's a question of the consequences of our action.
Well, what would that be? Would that be a punishment?
The result of sin.
Yeah. Is that what it is? What kind of concept did they have of God? If they'd have carried that concept into the new world, what would have happened? Yes, yeah. I mean, it turned out bad enough as it was, because look what happened when they went in there. But they were walking around in the wilderness because God had a plan for the people in that land. And many times we think that God was just wringing his hands, waiting till he could cut his children loose and send them into the promised land and butcher every single one of them. That's what we're told. What was really going on? They had a very destructive, bad concept of who God was. And God's plan was, let them go ahead and live out their life. Remember, he didn't kill them. He didn't say, all you people are bad, I'm going to go ahead and pull back the curtains, let the snakes bite every one of you, get rid of you, and then we'll go in. God never did that. That's punishment. That's slaughter. Walking around in the wilderness wasn't. Everything was taken care of. They had all their needs met until they all went to sleep. And then God said, with this new generation, let's go. Now, when we see him going into the promised land, what was going on? Well, every day that they were waiting in the wilderness and wandering around, guess what was happening in the world where they were going to go? Even in that condition, God was sending a message to them, and God did not want to destroy one of those people in the promised land. Never intended on that. He wasn't trying to kill people. That's easy for God. Remember, this is God. And he didn't do that. And we are told, and I could read that statement to you, that as they were going in there, I mean, as they were going around in the wilderness, guess the message that was going into the promised land? God was giving them every possible chance he could give them. And when they came up to the River Jordan, what happened to all the people that were in the Promised Land that lived at that point in the Promised Land? They knew they were coming their way. And do you think that God going up and confronting Jericho, that God was saying, just wait until I get hold of you, and I'm going to really make you look silly because I'm going to have them march around and around and around just to show you. What would have happened after the third day that Jericho would have opened their door and the king came out and knelt down and said, you've convinced me of the incredible God that you serve. Would Jericho have fallen?
No.
Absolutely not. So by God doing what he's doing, it's all in mercy, all in love, appealing to all of those people. The statement is, the thought of Jerusalem, the Israel coming, made our hearts like wax, melting, trembling. What could God do? What more could he do? One day, we're going to see that replayed. There's going to be that replaying of the entire Greek controversy. And we come to that place. There's going to be a pause in that playback over the city of Jerusalem when he replays it. There's going to be a pause and God hits the pause button. And he looks at it and says, what else could I do? That's what he was doing in the wilderness of Israel. Wandering around, feeding and cleansing and protecting and caring for them like little babies until the last one of them went to their rest. And while he was doing it, the message was being going into the Promised Land. And God said, if I do have to remove them from the Promised Land, I will send in hornets. You don't have to do a thing. God never intended on the children of Israel going in and slaughtering anyone. But no, leave it to man. We've got to do this our way. So here is God approaching them from a different level where they were. If Jericho would have repented, they would have opened that city, every single one of them. But as it was, who was saved?
A harlot.
A harlot. A lying harlot. Because she heard and she responded. Only one person. And God would have saved all of Jericho if the king would have come out and said, I'm overwhelmed at this God. Not only did Egypt fall, but Sion, the greatest king, one of the caused the people in the Promised Land to tremble. And Israel walked over them like they were nothing. Now they're ready to come into the Promised Land. So I need to ask you a question. For the next several weeks, we're going to be dealing with that statement of Jesus' way of preaching the gospel. Ministry of Healing 143. Only Jesus' method will do. Well, what was his method? He mingled. Ron brought me a statement. Do you have a copy of that there? And I want to build on that just a little bit. Do you mind reading your question at the beginning of it? He came up to me with this paper, and it tickled me because that's exactly where I was going with my study. And I thought, this is wonderful. Go ahead.
The first comment. By cultivating a culture of separation and isolation, we remove ourselves from too many opportunities to better know our neighbors, our coworkers, or classmates. And the next comment?
Yes.
Okay. The words non-Adventist should be banned from our vocabulary and abolished from our thinking. It has a negativity that separates and unfavorably compartmentalizes. In the same manner, calling someone non-Christian could imply a serious lack of character for that person. We should pray to God for forgiveness of using such language, even innocently, as non-Adventist or non-Christian or non-anything. Instead, let's put all people in a positive light when referring to them. Whoever they are, wherever their background, they're all God's children.
Were the children in the Promised Land God's children?
Yes.
Absolutely. What does it do to your concept of God when I tell you these things? When I tell you what I understand God is trying to do? He never wanted to slaughter them. He didn't want Israel to die. He didn't want Moses to die. And if God wanted to kill them, he could kill them properly without anything. And they're gone. But he didn't do that. What are you learning about the character of God? You see, the thing that God's trying to protect the world from is our excitement, our ecstatic reaction to the Sabbath. Health reform. Somehow, we think that's our message. God is protecting the world from an incorrect view of who He is. My passion, when I get an opportunity to stand up here, my passion is that, Father, I can tell the truth about you. That as I tell the truth about you, it's that truth that's going to lighten the world. I mean, the Sabbath is an amazing, beautiful gift within context. And the health reform is an incredible gift within the context of an overwhelming, beautiful Heavenly Father. And so, our lessons for the next few weeks are going to be on Christ's method. Each week, we're going to take one more word and try to explore to see what Christ's method was. The first one, which we're dealing with today, is to mingle. Now, you've got to come to grips with a concept. What did God mean when He sent them into the Promised Land and He didn't want them to mingle with the people? And yet today He's telling us to mingle. How do you deal with that? Are those two things out of two sides of His mouth? Are those different concepts? He's sending what the children of Israel did in the wilderness is exactly what's supposed to be happening with us. As God works with us day by day, that effect upon us is the assimilation of the character of Christ as we study each day, asking, Father, please teach me about yourself. Help me to know. That's exactly what that wilderness wandering is about. That's what this is about. We are in the wilderness wandering. Yes?
Having grown up an Adventist, I think I had to be prepared to mingle. I mean, I think I gradually learned how to, but I had to be prepared to.
Mm-hmm.
And I often have been blessed with thinking of being with CBS for 25 years because I had to mingle. I was pushed in and learned how to mingle.
Yes. Yeah. And what did you summarize in your life? How did you do that?
Well, I
am I putting you on the spot?
No.
Okay.
I don't know, but I think you were talking about doing. I think we have to quit doing and start being.
Okay. Okay. I'd love some time just to open up Sabbath School and see single words that would explain religion and single words that would explain spirituality in a relationship. Just words that would do that. Yes?
You're dealing with the concept of mingling. It is said that we are supposed to be in the world, but not of the world.
And how do you understand that? Would that be applicable to what happened with Israel going in the Promised Land?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Could you help me understand?
If I am going to take on the characteristics of the world, whatever that is, then I am mingling. And yet on the other hand, if I go in to do something, Jesus said, "You are my witnesses." And if I'm going to witness for him, I must mingle.
Absolutely. It's imperative. But what's the difference? Why did he tell that to Israel? Yes?
That's a good point. We can be of, but in the world, but not of, a part of the world. Jesus, when he mingled with the sinners and tax payers, he did not do what they did.
Okay.
In other words, I have a couple of friends. They're not believing as I do.
Mm-hmm.
I mingle with them. I see them drinking alcohol or smoking the cigarettes, but I can still mingle with them and not follow what they're doing.
Yes.
And that's what it is. Mingling means that you will be with the individuals, but not becoming a part of them or following their habits.
Yeah. Look at Peter's reaction. God was trying to get him to go out to the Gentiles. And look at Peter's reaction. He was asleep in the house and some travelers were coming their way. And had Peter been in the same frame of mind that he was before, he would have destroyed that effort. So as they were coming, God was busy giving Peter a vision of what? Health food? Is that what he was giving them? He gave the health message back with Peter. What was he doing? What was the vision that he gave to Peter? Hurry, the visitors are on the way. Come on. Ernie took most of my time this morning. Come on.
He was telling Peter not to think that everyone who did not believe as he did is an exile. Jesus was showing him that every individual is a part of his
achievement. Yes, Ron. That's exactly.
Repents,
yeah, they're all the children. So they're on the way there. And he was trying to help Peter to know all of them, whatever God has called clean, don't you call unclean. And what was he referring to? Those heathen that were coming on the way, they heard messages. And God had to make sure. And Peter said, he was so proud of the fact, Lord, I don't mingle among anyone. And Jesus trying to say, that's the whole issue. I haven't eaten anything unclean. Look how proud he was. That's not even the issue. And to be able to go among them, You've got to remember in this mingling, the law of the devil is to extinguish any evidence whatsoever of who God is. Do you think the devil is fearful that the word, that the Bible go all around the world? Huh?
Yes, he's fearful.
No. I heard he has a no. Great. Where's the no? Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah. Yeah, Lord, tell me more so I know what to do.
I mean, I think that's what was going on. I mean, in our day, the battle is against Pharisaical attitudes. That's why we've got so many examples of Pharisees in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Because God knew the Pharisees would be with us always.
Yes.
And it's the Pharisee, the Pharisaical attitude, that, of course, that, you know, muddies the image of the character.
Yeah. Yeah, notice what happened. Of these elite religious leaders, as far as I know, at the beginning, only two of them came, Nicodemus and Paul. Later on, a whole host of priests came in because it dawned on them what was going on. But when you look at what God is trying to do, the devil tries to extinguish the character of God, even in the Bible. Not afraid of you doing that. He just doesn't want to pass into the mind and the heart of the person, and they are overwhelmed by the character of God. Because the devil's trying to wipe out every knowledge. It's okay that the tree is there that reflects the character of God, but if I can get them to believe a lie about the tree, then I don't care if that tree is there, if that stone is there. That was 60 billion years ago or whatever it was. He tries to efface, he tries to erase any knowledge of what God is like, because the moment that he sees, the person sees what God is like, the power is broken. He knows that. And so, in erasing all of that, he was trying to extinguish that. And Jesus tells us to go in for us to experience what God is like and to carry that with us in every place that we go. And now we find out that the power of the devil can be broken, because we're not out there trying to tell people how to eat and try to tell people about the Sabbath and all that. That's not our main goal. Eat the healthiest you can. Respect this temple. Go out there. Keep the Sabbath. But see every one of those human beings as God's child. Yes, Lord.
I had an experience this last weekend which demonstrates somewhat what you're talking about in real life, myself and my family. My great-grandson was going to be baptized. The mother is Episcopalian, and the father, our grandson, graduated from Burton just a short time ago. And so, maybe I'm from that first generation. I said, I'm not going to go. My wife said, well, I'm going. The daughter went, all the family went. I saw the pictures. The grandson knew better than that, but he held that baby and participated. He read the scripture, but he asked me, along with the experience there, I know the family. He asked, well, don't you think this baby, does he know what's going on here? Talking to the priest. And he said, what is really taking place here? He said, this young baby is going to be cleansed from the time he was born till now. So he participated, and they went through with it. But that was a very real experience of really what is God about.
Yes.
I mean, what else? It wasn't time for a Bible study. It wasn't the place for it.
Yes.
You know, it really illustrated what you're talking about. Are we of the world or are we not?
Yes.
You know, that statement, in the world or of the world, you know, as you know from your perspective, mine as therapist, you see people of the world and they're lost. So we make it sound like they're missing out on some big thing, but of the world worries about how I look here, or the world worries about what's my bank account, or how am I going to do here.
Yes.
It's all about terminal, very finite things.
Yes.
And in that finite orientation, you wonder what's going to be their last thought, and they take their last breath.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's the key, is it's really understanding that we have an understanding that we're not a part of this, and we don't have, this isn't our security.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. I want you to understand something. We used to spend a lot of time trying to train people to give Bible studies and how to lead a person to Christ and how to memorize all the text, and so that we can be prepared to go out there. I want you to know this. If you have caught an insight into what God is like, something about His character has thrilled your soul, you have all it takes to lead someone to Christ. You have everything you need. You are the gospel. You don't have to go out and know all the scriptures. Just bearing the testimony of what God has done in my heart, that is the gospel. And when it goes beyond that, you can look them up. You can give a Bible study if you want to. But the main thing that God is wanting to do is to so impact us with the knowledge of what He is like. And as that enters my life, something happens to me. It may be infinitesimal. How much of a gospel did the demoniacs have? What did they know? What did they do? They didn't know one Bible study. They just knew I was like this, I'm like this, and He did it. The blind man. I don't know, I was there and I didn't know who he was. I never even saw him. He rubbed that mud all over my face and over my eyes. I couldn't see, and then he slipped away. I didn't know who he was. All I know was I was blind and now I see. That's the gospel. That's your gospel. And there's not another gospel in the entire universe that is like your gospel. It doesn't have to be this big. It doesn't have to be like you've got some theological degree. It's just that I heard what God was like. I let Him into my heart and something happened to me. Don't worry where He's going to take you. Because at that moment that you see Him, He who has the Son has life. Period. He who has not the Son of God has not life. And that life is what will turn the world upside down. God wants us to do what Jesus did. So, I got stuck for probably 2 or 3 days on one concept. And that concept is in the Patriarchs and Prophets. I've got the page down here. Patriarchs and Prophets, and when man fell, and to see the drama that took place between the Father and the Son. And when they saw that, even though the plan was laid at the foundation of the world, we're building into man that possibility that he can reject us. And when that happens, what are we going to do? Well, we know love can't sit still. Love will do it. Do you know that if the Son hadn't done what he did, the Father would have done it. Everything you see Jesus doing, the Father would have done identically the same thing. But the Father says, as much as it tears my heart out, I would do it, but the greater love is to send your own Son. Now, what does that mean? Is that just like a messenger to send him out to go and tell people? No, it says when Jesus made that decision, he became human flesh for eternity. When it said he came and mingled, he took on everything that made him human and then responded to the love of God. So when it says that he came and gave himself permanently. What does that do to your heart when you hear those words out of my mouth? What does that do about your insight into the character of God? What does that tell you that he's like? And so when we see that Jesus decided to, I think it's in the chapter on the fall, I don't want to take time wasting time, so much time was taken away from me at the first, I don't And so when you look...
Was it the long introduction?
Yeah. Here, Rob. When you look at that and you see what's going on and Jesus asks us to mingle, all he's asking us to do is taste and see that I'm God. Behold, and you'll become changed. So it doesn't matter if how long we've been in this church, if something about the character of God hits you here. Jesus is not trying to build up something so that you are saved here. He who has the Son has life. And you're going to grow in your concept and your understanding. You're going to continually grow. But what is growing? That I eat better? That I keep the Sabbath better? That's not what growing is. Growing is in the knowledge of what God is like. And then he says, I want to send you out into the world to mingle.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Brown.
He's sending us in the world to mingle.
I'm sorry, a little louder.
Why is he protecting the word from us? If he wants us to mingle, why is he protecting the word from us?
And what have you come up with?
No, I don't know.
Somebody answer his question.
Because maybe we don't have that right concept down to clearly.
Okay. Do you all like that answer?
Yes,
absolutely.
There's your answer. What do you think?
No, you have always caused me to think. And I appreciate that. But sometimes I'm left with no answer. You know, where do I go?
Mm-hmm.
Does it ever have happened to you?
Oh, yes.
You come up with no answer.
Mm-hmm. So what do?
Pray.
That's a good. To whom?
God.
Somebody who cares?
Yes.
Okay. And so when we find that we're supposed to mingle, don't be afraid of that. He will help us, he will guide us. God did not want the children of Israel to go into the promised land and just say, we're stronger than you, so you better submit, and then we'll live among you, because look what happened. Their way, what did it do? And if you aren't convinced about that, read the book of Judges. Moses died, Joshua died, and the people lost the concept of who God was. It says they did not know God. And then look what happened. And we see them falling and falling, and we see God delivering and delivering, trying to show the people, show the world. And He wants us, as we go among the people, He wants us to tell our gospel. There's no gospel like yours. That's all. I used to get the concept that if somebody asked a question, well, immediately tackled them, threw them to the ground, held them down, and started stuffing in. Pretty soon as they belched, I thought, well, that's about enough. And then I found out all I do is ask the question and leave them hungry. Always. And Mrs. White adds the statement, live in such a way to where you create a hunger in another person's life. What are they looking for? Peace? Happiness? Looking for fulfillment? Live with that joy, and your light cannot go out. Mingle. So as you rub shoulders with people, you're not there to try to do anything, but just to live. To live with that love, to live with that peace. And watch what will happen. So many times we're afraid to do it because we're afraid we'll get into a situation where someone will ask me a question I don't know what to say. Well, if someone wants to know how I was converted, only I know that. All I can do is answer the question of what happened to me. I know when I rose up off my knees, I was a changed man. And I didn't know anything. I was changed. And then God began doing more and more and more in my life. But you know, the very first thing that happened to me when I first got off my knees, I wanted to run down to Eureka, California. I wanted to run down there. I lived just on the outskirts. I wanted to find the highest building, and I wanted to get up there and start screaming. What would I say? All I know is I knelt on my knees in one condition. I got up in another condition. That's what God is trying to get us to do. When you hold that word, Father, please reveal to me who you are. And He's waiting with His breath held, waiting, looking on tiptoes, like that father looking for his son, waiting for someone to ask that question. Father, would you reveal to me what you're like? All heaven waits for that moment. Father in heaven, how glorious, how magnificent, how incredible you are. In spite of all my teachings and learnings, somehow you get underneath all my religiosity and help me to be in touch with who I am. I know what I was like before. I know what I'm like now. And I know that every human being that we meet out there, each one is your child. Oh, Father, please guide us in this class that as we live, that we may live in such a way that we create a hunger in somebody else's life and that we'll be able to give the answer. And we know that the light will go around like lightning to help others know what a wonderful, wonderful person you are. Thank you for the gift of your Son. Thank you for what you've done. In Jesus' name, amen.